Empire of the Suns.
Suns.
Empire of the Suns.
Wet like on book. Wet like on book. Wet like on book.
Arizona Sports presents the Empire of the Suns podcast.
Empire of the Suns.
I'm Kevin Zimmerman, joined by Kellen Olson. This is the Empire of the Suns podcast. Today, Steve Nash goes into the Hall of Fame. We're going to talk about that a little bit, and then we're going to answer some questions. But first, Nash, probably, I mean, you can guess my age, the most important son to me, but that's just me. He's a two-time MVP. He's going into the Hall of Fame. What are your kind of thoughts about that, and maybe just thoughts on Nash looking back as someone around my age who grew up watching the guy?
Well, let's hit on that first point. I think he is the most important son of all time. There are going to be people much older than us that disagree, but if you look at the reach and the people that we just interact with on social and where they're from, like, there's a lot from Australia, there's a lot from just across the nation. That is because those people watch the Steve Nash Suns teams. They were an absolute delight to watch. He was an absolute delight to watch, and people became fans. Like, you can say Warriors fans or bandwagoners or whatever, but it's not like the Detroit Pistons when they had Ben Wallace and Rip Hamilton. The Warriors are extremely fun to watch. LeBron James is extremely fun to watch. The Suns didn't get titles, but they still had a, not bandwagon effect, but just a reach effect where they were so fun to watch that a lot of people became Suns fans just because of him. And I think we are able to do this podcast. We are able to have Empire of the Suns because of Steve Nash, because there are so many people. I did not realize this when I was doing Locked On Suns. I looked at like the advanced analytics and looked at like a map of where people are listening from. I had people listening, like, I had over 50 listeners a week from Germany.
Yeah.
It's like just Germany. And then, like, looking at Europe as a whole, it's like I had like at least 300 people listening a week from Europe. And then looking at Australia, there was a lot of numbers. Looking at Canada and other places, that's because of Steve Nash. Now, you can say it's because of people became fans at different times, of course, but I truly believe that's because of Steve Nash. And that's why I believe, from my very biased point of view with what I do now, that is because of Steve Nash and because of those 7 seconds or less teams and because of how long they lasted, too. That's the thing that gets lost on me a bit, is kind of forgetting the renaissance of that 2011 year. And it was 04 was the first year. So that's a pretty long time. It's nearly a decade that they were at that level, and he was at that level as well. And not only the fact that he was a two-time MVP, but also with what we just talked about in the outreach and just how fun, like, people... So many people love guys like Quentin Richardson and Tim Thomas and Leandro Barbosa and
Diao's some of best years were
Kurt Thomas, Joe Johnson before he turned into All-Star ISO Joe. All those guys were favorites of people because of Nash, basically. Even Amari, you can make that argument with Amari. Amari certainly was helped by Nash, certainly in the beginning of his career at least. And that's, yeah, he's extremely important to what the Suns are, and anyone who, like, doesn't think that he's a, at least top two, top three most important son of all time is a moron.
I was driving here thinking what I was going to say, because I didn't cover him super long.
You wrote a thing. I don't think we said that yet. You wrote a thing.
You covered a lot of that. I mean, I wrote a thing. It's on the website, and my whole deal on that is a lot of what you just said, where I think he's important. He's obviously important for basketball. Like, he and Mike D'Antoni, how they played changed how we look at basketball today. Few guys can say that. Michael Jordan arguably couldn't even say that. Like, if you go back, he was a great player and people probably tried to emulate him. But for as far as changing how the game around one player has played, like, no one has done that I can think of. LeBron hasn't done that. LeBron's great himself, but he hasn't changed, to me, how other guys play around him. And just Steve Nash's personality and how he played, like, he's the guy you always say, like, he looks like, people say often, they look like an average dude on the street. Like, you would see Steve Nash skateboarding, like on along the beach in California and be like, oh, there's some hippie guy. And it turns out he's a two-time MVP because I don't know why. I can't explain it. Like, he's a good athlete, but he was just so good. And I think just like his background also, he's not a guy who's going to be like, oh, I'm going to stand for Phoenix. Like, I don't even know if he's been back here other than the Ring of Honor ceremony, but he's just always different places doing different things and kind of changed how you think of athletes and like elite athletes who are so tuned in. Kobe's tuned in, Michael Jordan's obsessed, but Nash like had this weird, like he would go months, I think, in the off season and be like, I didn't really pick up a basketball. Like, that's ridiculous. But I was going to say, I was driving in here thinking what I could say about him. And like, in high school, I think the very first thing I ever wrote about sports was in a class about Steve Nash. And it was a creative writing class. And I was just like, yo, write something, whatever you feel like it could be anything. And I was like, well, I watched the Suns. I'm going to write about how important this, I think it was 06, 07, somewhere around there, how important this era of Steve Nash basketball was. And that's what I wrote about. That's the very first sports thing I can think of that I wrote about. And now I am doing this right here. So, like, where would I be if Steve Nash didn't exist? I don't know. So that's powerful personally, but like reading around the web, lots of people have those same things. Like, they became Suns fans because of that.
I have told this before in other places and maybe even here, but I was very fortunate as a kid. My dad shared season tickets with three or four other guys for the D-backs and the Suns, so I would be able to go like 10 to 15 games like a year between the two. So I got a lot of unique experiences. Like, one of the greatest sports memories I ever have is seeing Pedro pitch. It's just like, it's Pedro, you know, and just watching him pitch. But I was going to Suns games for a while as a kid, and then the Nash came, and I was excited, but I was pissed because I was 13 years old, and Tracy McGrady was a free agent, and I wanted Tracy McGrady. I wanted Tracy McGrady bad, and then once they got Nash, it was not financially possible for them to get T-Mac. I was one of those 13-year-olds, and everyone's replies on, like, whatever, or just sending emails to beat writers and being like, can they financially afford to get Tracy McGrady now? Because I really want Tracy McGrady in a Suns uniform. So I didn't really like Steve Nash that much at first. And then I watched him play, and I was confused because the first game we went to, they scored like eight straight times down. Like, they would always have those runs. Nash and Amari doing the pick and roll, shooters on the corners. I asked my dad, I was confused. I was like, why does this keep working? And he was like, watch 41. And that's the guy guarding the weak side corner. And watching him and watching the way Nash and Amari would make their defenders move and make that guy move and make him either leave the shooter or whatever it was, I learned about off-ball defense. I learned about how things move on the court, which was like the perfect combination of that and LeBron coming into the league and seeing how he did it as well and just manipulating defenses. That's the number one thing I appreciate about ball handlers is their ability to manipulate defenses, because I watched Nash do it growing up and learning about basketball. That led to me watching basketball in a different way, eventually wanting to write about it, and I'm fairly confident I would have never chosen to write about sports or gotten a passion for it without watching the Nash teams in person.
I was like, the age, like junior high, when you're most like, oh, I need someone to root for. Like, I grew up in Phoenix and I rooted for Marbury, and Marbury was my boy. And so he has like a different kind of, like, I compartmentalize what he is. Like, he was my favorite player growing up. Nash was not. I was kind of old enough where I was like, oh, I enjoy basketball and this is amazing. But like, what Nash was so good at, like, I would sit down and like, you would get giddy. Like, I don't get giddy over things anymore because I'm an adult, probably, and I'm jaded, and the world is terrible now. Just kidding. That's a little dark, but...
Yeah, it is. Surprise, I feel that way. Yeah.
But, you know, proceed. I wish I had that feeling where I could sit down and watch a player and know every game that something ridiculous is going to happen. Even if it's just one play, like, you're going to see something ridiculous, and that was super exciting for me. I kind of get that, like, maybe when Devin Booker is getting better, I'm going to start getting that a lot more. Things like that, where you're just like, I know something cool is going to happen this game, but that was every night with him. And that's what I remember most, is high school kid.
Remember when people would dribble down the baseline and stop? And then he invented that, basically. People just, like, sure, there are koozie clips, whatever, of him in grainy footage, like, dribbling around like that. But he would always, it's called the midget, he would always do it. And it would always yield a positive result because it was so confusing for defenses. And then they've adapted since, and guys have stopped using it as much just because it was so good because people weren't used to it. It was, man, learning how a behind-the-back pass is actually not flashy, but the best available option from him.
Yeah.
It was just things like that where even a basic thing where you can shoot 8 times in a game and be the best player on the court by a mile. It's all these little basketball philosophy things that I learned from watching him. So I think we've babbled on enough, but he was special, and I'm low-key pissed I wasn't born 10 years earlier to cover him because that would have been a whole lot of fun.
Still pissed at Steve Nash.
Yep, always pissed. I wanted T-Mac, dude. I was a huge Starberry guy, too, dude. Never forget the Spurs series when we almost had the Spurs. We were so close.
Yeah. Best game of my life, yeah.
Yeah, I ran around my house. I was losing my mind as a kid, yeah.
Yeah, I think that sums it up. On to questions. We submitted a plea for your questions on the tweet machine a couple days ago. What do you want to start on? Do you want to start with that Rozier one?
Let's hit on that real a quick. Bit. I think that is something we talked about last time and we're going to come back to, but there was a question. I have to find it. We actually had a lot of questions, so I'm scrolling through to find. Can't read your name, dude, but on a scale of 1 to 10, what's your confidence in the front office at the moment? I think this is a really good question for right now, specifically.
From a guy whose name we can't read.
Yeah, blank boy, you can guess it. If you listen to a certain genre of music, you probably...
Mr. Chains, what his name was.
Exactly. So this is a very interesting question to answer right now, because I think this dropped down a point or two automatically with what is going on right now. The Phoenix Suns do not have a point guard right now. Yes, they have Shaquille Harrison, Elia Kobo, Isaiah Cannon, D'Anthony Melton.
And Devin Booker.
Point book, whatever, man. They don't actually have a point guard, though. And what we learned from what we've read and what I have heard specifically is that the Suns have been trying to get a point guard for quite some time now. This has not been something that started once they realized they could trade Brandon Knight or whatever. They have been doing this for quite a while now and failing. And not, from what I've seen and heard, not including substantial pieces yet in these deals. And substantial, I think I mean TJ Warren when I say that. I don't think he's being included in these deals. Or if he is, it's like far below, his value is far below whoever's coming back. It sounds like the Suns are not properly valuing what's going on right now. They're trying to nickel and dime their way through this. And this goes back to a podcast that is now very relevant from a month and a half, 2 months ago, where you wrote a thing about how the Suns have chosen to build through the draft, but at a certain point, unless you have 3 MVP candidates on your team, like OKC did, not candidates, sorry, MVP winners on your team, eventual, you are going to have to make a trade and at some point go find someone established. The Suns don't think that point is here yet, obviously, or else they would have a point guard right now. So to go back to the Rozier question as well and kind of combine these two into one whole discussion, something like trading Josh Jackson for Terry Rozier seems completely out of the question for them right now.
Value-wise,
it's not extremely off, in my opinion, but it's a trade where value-wise, the Suns probably lose that deal. But at a certain point, they're going to have to take an L on a deal or do something, because that group of, say it's like Bender, Melton, Okobo, the Milwaukee pick and something else, a collection of those minor assets is not going to get a deal done for a good point guard right now. It's just not going to. And it sounds like that's what they're trying to do right now. So I would say my front office confidence meter is at a 5 or a 6 maybe, and I'm generally at like a 7, 8 or a 9, because I felt like they've always had a plan and stuck to it despite the moves that have gone wrong. And people who are more critical of the moves that have gone wrong are probably like a 1 or a 2 or 3, and I don't blame them, because the team doesn't have a point guard right now. And they've been, the thing that's upsetting, not upsetting or just concerning, I should say, is this has been going on for a while. It's been going on all summer. They've been trying to get a point guard and they haven't gotten him yet.
I think you said it last podcast, if I'm not mistaken, that they're going to have to overpay.
Yep.
To get a star or and probably a star point, not even a star point guard, but just like even a starting caliber at this point. The problem is they've sold all their assets off almost except for that Bucks pick that they're going to get. And the question about Josh Jackson plus a Bucks pick, to me, that's value-wise not absolutely ridiculous. That's not good for them. That's they're losing as far as pure value right now, but that's realistic. Like, the Celtics might be like, well, probably not looking at who they have already at small forward and all their combo forward, but value-wise, they would look at them and be like, yeah, we might do that because, I mean, a lot has to do with Kyrie still, but I think value-wise, that's not too much, which is the question. And to get back to that 1 to 10 scale, yes, I'm at like a 5 because what they've done, whether you agree with it or not, it hasn't come without having at least a plan in place. Right now, it looks like they have a plan, but no idea how to do it. Like, the plan is to get a point guard, and they haven't been able to do it. Yeah.
Something I do on this podcast a lot is say what I believe the thought process was for the Suns front office, and I believe their front office was point guard. That's deepest position in sports. We'll find one. Might take till mid-September, but we're going to get one eventually, and we don't have to pay that much for it. We're not there yet. Media day, if we show up at media day, which is 2 weeks from Monday, and they don't have a guy yet, that is when the alarm should start going off. Because they're trying. That's the whole point of this. They are trying, and they're failing right now. And either they're just not finding the right balance, I think. In the deals that I believe they are trying to put real value in, they're not getting that guy. But in the deals where they maybe could get a guy, they're not offering enough.
It's like, what do you expect? Like, if you're talking to them, like, what do you expect teams? Do you want teams to take a bunch of, like, let's put these assets in tiers. Do you want them to take a bunch of B and C tier athletes, players, picks for a guy who's in an A tier? Like, I don't think you should expect that, even if you pour a bunch into it.
You have to give teams a reason to trade someone when they're not fully interested in trading them.
Yeah.
I don't think the Raptors or the Timberwolves want to deal DeLon Wright or Tyus Jones necessarily. So you have to give them a reason to do it. And I don't think they're giving teams a reason to do the deals. Why would the Celtics get rid of Terry Rozier right now, especially with the Kyrie thing? Why would they do that? Josh Jackson. That's why they would do that. That would be like, oh, yeah. Whoa. He can be our fourth wing.
We'll forgive you for canceling that tryout and making Danny Ainge lose sleep
This guy can be our fourth wing while he develops and learns our stuff and everything. And then eventually we move on from Gordon Hayward. Now we've got these three guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll take Marcus Smart as my starting point guard potentially next year and take that chance.
I'll just run Marcus Smart, Josh Jackson, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, and what, Al Horford out? That's going to be my future starting five once these guys develop even more. Well, mostly Jackson.
I'd be really interested to hear the Celtics side of that and how a Celtics writer feels about that. Maybe we're just inflating it too much because we just love wings who do stuff. And Terry Rozier might be more valued than we think.
Yeah.
But I still think that's the type of deal where you have to... We understand. People replying to us and calling us morons for proposing that. We understand that they're losing the deal. That's the whole point right now.
You're going to, yeah.
The front office is at a 5 or a 6 for me. And honestly, after talking about it, I'm at like a 3 or 4 because power forward is where you have Devin Booker, you have the small forward, whatever, and you have DeAndre Ayton. So those three spots are filled by young players. You now need to add 2 very solid veterans or up-and-coming NBA players, established NBA guys at point guard and power forward. I guess they've done that power forward, Ryan Anderson, Trevor Ariza, sure, but nothing long-term. And now point guard, you don't have anything either. They need to get one of those long-term, or at least short-term, like a 2 to 3 year guy, like this year, if they want to trend upward this year. And they're not going to do that unless they add a point guard.
That kind of leads into Benjamin R. Warner's question, which was, assume the Suns are best poised to contend around 2022. What is the optimal long-term point guard strategy? Which is kind of like, well, if they're going to contend by then, they can do whatever the hell they want now.
Yeah.
But
that's 4 years away.
The problem is McDonough doesn't have that time. He should not be operating under that for his own job's security. Yeah, they need a good player now is the quick answer to that. Let's see.
They need someone who's good now, and maybe they can... Rozier's the example because he's good now and he could be better by then. But they need someone who is good now.
Yeah.
That's where you even get into like Delonte and Tyus Jones. And you're like, hey, yeah, they're okay, but...
Also, for the sake of like what you've said, like I don't even care if you don't actually get better, but if you don't make a move from now until the start of the season, then you've lied to your fan base. You said you're going to get better. You said you're going to try to win now because Devin Booker's ready to go. And that was a flip-flop from like a year before. Are you just going to flip-flop back and just be like, yeah, we're going with the rookie point guard? That's a bad look. Like that's kind of the funny part about this is like public perception, I always say, plays a part. And it doesn't look good when you've said three different things and then done the opposite after saying each of those things. So that's where we're at. There's still time. A couple weeks.
There's still time.
Plus
yeah.
whatever into the... Like, if they get a preseason trade, like, maybe you get a starting caliber point guard right as the season begins, but...
And we're probably being too harsh. We're just looking at this right now like we should, which is that they have been trying to get a point guard for a while and haven't done it, but they might be doing that because they're like, okay...
We have time.
September, 1 week from media day, okay, now we'll start including our own first-round picks. Now we'll start including Josh Jackson or TJ Warren in these deals. Now we'll really start to get going here. I think this is where we should transition into a question I actually don't have up at the moment, but here it is. Kyle McDonald asks, the small forward situation looks extremely crowded right now. Hypothetically, even if TJ gets moved for a point guard, are you worried about minutes for Mikal Bridges, a guy that gave up a lot to go and get? Kyle's thought here is right on the money. Because what I said on draft night, and you can go back and listen to our podcast the night of the draft or the one we had a couple days later, we essentially talked about this point with Mikal Bridges and that there are several different reasons why Mikal Bridges is valuable. One of those, and one of the highest ones, is that he is older, he is ready to play right now, and he has a skill set that is ready to play right now. He is not this... Josh Jackson slasher defense, whatever, like not really sure yet what it turns into kind of thing in the NBA.
We know.
We have an idea. We already know what he is right away. And that's the type of guy you move up for to play right away and at least help you in certain spots. And that's where we talk about Josh Jackson now, who went from a serious part of the long-term core to, yeah, we could give him up, but that's... Because you got Mikal Bridges.
And TJ Warren still.
And you still have TJ Warren. Because the best players to put around someone like Devin Booker and DeAndre Ayton, the best players to put around those two, they should get three guys who can play defense and shoot. The three and the four should absolutely be able to do that. So hypothetically, long term right now, that is Bender and Bridges. Those are the two best candidates to do that on the team at the very moment.
Yep.
And the point guard is probably the best spot from a projection standpoint where you look at the third offensive option, perhaps, because they're going to be handling the ball a fair bit. And that's where I look at someone like Rozier and be like, oh, yeah, like he could be like the third offensive option with those guys.
Was it Charks who wrote that thing for The Ringer in the last week or so that was like has very good point about Bridges, which you should read, Kyle McDonald? It was basically Mikal Bridges could be the glue for all of this plan working because he's the defender and shooter. He's going to help Josh. He's going to help Devin. He's going to help DeAndre. And that's kind of weird to think about, like the guy with what everyone projects as less upside. Like he actually could be one of the most important pieces to this. So to get to the question though, yeah, that's a little worrisome. Like, I am not actually that worried, I guess, because I think he's valuable as a shooting guard. Like, I think he can play the two. He might not be athletic enough in some cases, but he's switchable enough and he's athletic and a good enough defender where I think they can get away with playing him with a lot of those guys. But yeah, it's still like between him, Ariza, Warren, Jackson, it's like, what do you want?
How much does Igor's system and rotation allow players to play off their position? How much is Mikhail actually going to play the two, quote-unquote? How much is he going to play, quote-unquote, the four? Or is it the inverse where TJ's playing the four and Mikhail's playing the three? How much is he going to allow guys to move around like that? If he does allow that, which I think he should to a certain extent, I think they're going to be okay. The Ryan Anderson arrival complicates matters even further because now it looks like Trevor Ariza is starting at the three if Ryan Anderson is starting at the four.
That's, yeah.
Trevor Ariza's not coming off the bench, folks. You're paying that guy $15 million a year this year to come in and really impact this team. He's doing it in the starting lineup. So if... if this is the roster, I'm extremely worried about Mikal Bridges getting minutes, but I assume we are going to see it. The weirdest thing is the Suns, if they're trying to acquire a point guard without giving up one of those wings, because then it's like Mikal is just, where is he going to play? So you traded up, you gave up the Miami pick for this guy. Yes, he's going to be important long term, but that's the whole point. You gave up a lot to get him because he's going to be able to help right now. That's part of his value. He's not going to be Dragan Bender or Marquise Chris where you're like, oh, who cares? Year one project. I care about year one. He should make an all-rookie team next year.
What other questions? What? There's another one about Josh Jackson. What does it say? This is from Tortuga, David Stat Guy. What does it say about Jackson that the Suns' offseason moves pushed him out of an opportunity to start? And that Warren is still around. Is there a reason to doubt his ceiling? Meaning Jackson's. I don't know what their offseason moves say about Jackson and if they've changed their thoughts about him. But he's now in that TJ Warren land where, yeah, like you just said, if they're going to make a trade for a point guard or a star or whatever, they're probably going to include a wing or two. That's all I'll say about that.
It says a lot about TJ Warren that they've drafted Jackson Bridges in back-to-back drafts. It also says a lot about Jackson that they took Bridges. It says a lot about all three and that they're not looking at one guy in particular to be their small forward.
They're basically like, you guys fight it out. Like, if it goes to camp, you guys fight it out. There's pressure on you. You're not going to get minutes if you don't. And if someone proves more valuable, then... maybe you found an NBA caliber starter in the piece that you want to put by Booker, is how I'm judging it. Like, maybe they haven't really decided, but...
yeah, I agree.
Ooh. 30-ish wins.
Given he is healthy and plays the expected starter minutes, when should we know if we hit the home run with Ayton or not? That is Nathan's question. A home run? I would
say we're not going to know this year.
We are not going to know for a while. If he's a rookie of, if he wins rookie of the year while being not competent for a rookie defensively, that is when I will feel safe in saying he is going to be a star.
Yeah.
If he puts up real production offensively while not being a huge liability defensively, he's a rookie center, so he's going to be a liability no matter what. But if he is competent there for a rookie and he is everything on offense everyone expects him to be, I think that's when we can start to feel like we've hit a home run. You can tell by the tone of my voice that I'm not really sure this is going to happen. He's raw.
He's raw.
I think it's going to be longer. We're not going to know for another 2 years, I think.
That's what's crazy and hard, because not being one of those guys who's on the high school circuit looking at AAU games and scouting at that young of an age, I think he has improved a bit. Like, Sean Miller was probably not hard on him as he is on other guys because he knew he was going to be gone. And that's how Sean Miller operates. He's going to play his one and done. But I think he did improve a little bit. I think he... sounds like he's very aware that he has a long way to go. And yeah, that's the biggest problem with the Suns in the last few years, is they haven't been able to teach guys and improve guys and internally develop them. So that's that's a problem that's even beyond DeAndre Ayton and Josh Jackson and Dragan Bender. Like, that's a system question mark that's hanging over this team.
I think we can wrap on these two questions. Brian asked, why do you think the Suns front office felt it was a good idea to make the trade of their only starting caliber point guard before they actually acquired a replacement? And then Ryan asked, given that the Suns have improved at almost every position, can they still win 30 plus games with the current point guard rotation? To both Ryan and Brian's questions, I will say Gambo's report of there being the need for another procedure on Brandon Knight's knee was extremely telling in terms of, was he even going to be ready for the start of the regular season, and is he still fully healthy yet? Obviously, he's not that much later. And we say starting caliber point guard. Knight, yes, we were optimistic that he could be, but he's certainly not one right now anyway. And this just takes it back to the discussion we had after the trade, and with what Ryan also asked, is they put themselves in this position right now because they wanted to get rid of these guys. That's what it looks like. Because you would certainly, I was expecting a trade to come down 48, 72 hours later. And then once I spent more time with it, I was like, especially the Woj thing I talked about last podcast, where he said they're continuing to look for a point guard, and everything we talked about in the opening of this Q&A with how long they've been trying to get this point guard this summer. That is very indicative of where they currently sat with Chris and Knight and moving on from them as a whole. And that played a large role. I don't think it was the entire trade. I think there's some other stuff to consider there. Anderson, veteran stretch four. Maybe they like D'Anthony Melton. I think at the end of the day, though, they were looking to move on from both of those guys, and they got a really good opportunity to do it, and they did. Especially with, maybe the most telling thing was how some people reacted outside of Arizona and saying, what a steal for the Rockets. And it's just like, oh, I don't think they understand. Not that they don't understand how Knight and Chris
neither
have played.
Neither team liked that situation that they're in.
Exactly. And, yeah. That's all it was about.
Let's have a different situation where we're paying a lot of money for maybe not very much, is basically what it was.
And also that some of those outside people were like, Bill Simmons, like, I love Simmons. I grew up reading Simmons. he said, like, Brandon Knight's absolutely tradable or whatever. And I was like, phew.
Not accurate.
No, Bill.
Narrator. He wasn't.
Yeah, that is false, Bill. and as is just the thought that Ryan Anderson's contract is just so much worse than Brandon Knight's, even after the report that came out that they're going to reduce his contract in year two to the same price as Brandon Knight's. It's just about them moving on, and that's all this trade was. But of course, it now sparks the conversation of who's going to be the point guard. I think the Suns have been having this conversation for 6+ months already.
Yeah.
This is not something where they were planning on Knight as 1A. There's no way after what we just saw with the trade.
That's true. They didn't suddenly just decide to trade him, even if they were like, oh, your knee's bad still. I don't buy that they were actually thinking that now that you say that. September 24th, is that media day? Is that a Monday, 2 weeks from now?
That is Monday. So we have got 2 weeks of podcasts to bring you guys. Boy, Kevin, I sure hope one of those is about a new point guard. So we'll see how next week and the week after that unfolds, and we'll kind of figure out what to discuss. But we will have media day takeaways in 2 weeks.
We could have let's look at this roster and pretend. Maybe we do that next week. We could just be like, okay, let's pretend this roster is what it is, and we're going to talk about which point guard's going to start.
If you're listening, Ryan McDonough, for our convenience as a podcast, why don't you trade for your point guard next week so we can talk about it next week, and then the week after that, preview the roster before Media Day, and then we'll talk about Media Day.
Or that.
After Media Day, they are in Flagstaff for 4 days. Ya boy will be there. You might make an appearance at the scrimmage on that Saturday.
Who can say?
That is the story of Kevin Zimmerman's life the past 2 months in terms of his work schedule. Who can say? So we'll have those 4 days and that scrimmage. So we'll talk about Media Day that week. And then the next week we will be talking about my impressions and our impressions from everything we hear out of training camp and then the scrimmage itself. And then, my gosh, that following Monday, preseason basketball.
Who are they playing?
I think they open with the Kings and then it's Brisbane 2 days later.
What is their mascot? I don't know.
The Bullets, I believe.
It is.
The Brisbane Bullets.
Okay.
God bless them.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Check out our stuff on arizonasports.com. We've been, you know, having an occasional story. Kellen wrote about the trade more this week. We'll have stuff about Hall of Fame ceremonies, which is happening right now as we speak. Oops.
Yeah, we wrote about D'Anthony Melton, who might not even be on the team still. We don't know yet. But wrote about him, wrote about Marquise Chris moving on. Lots of stuff there. Lots of stuff still coming.